Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
This week, and every week, we'll start the show with a tip of the week. And then we'll talk about audio-described programming, whether it's for movies, television, or live theater. Our focus item this week will be on Audacity, which is a free bit of software that you can use for recording or editing any kind of sounds. And then our high-tech item will be about some websites and other web-enabled sources for information about the visually impaired and what's available. So this week's tip of the week is labeling your clothing. It can be hard knowing what clothing matches what, even if you can tell what color it is. But if you can't, that makes it even harder. Now that we're retired, Pete has a much easier time getting dressed in the morning. He just grabs a random shirt and a pair of jeans, and everything's fine.
They all match.
But when we were working professionals, it was both harder and more important to make everything look good together. And fortunately, somebody's thought of a solution to this problem.
Well, I don't know. One of my easy solutions back then and back in the day was to always wear a white shirt.
But short of wearing a white shirt all of the time, what else do you use for telling what colors you're wearing?
Well, so one thing that we got into a long time ago was the idea of using Braille tags to indicate the different kinds of colors on clothes, the different colors and patterns. And so these tabs, I think the first time we got them was from ABVI downtown. For free, they would give you a little package of little tiny pieces of metal with two letters of Braille, because you didn't want to take up a whole lot of space. Typically, you know, we'd have something like RD for red, WT for white, and Nancy would sew these on the bottom of the collars of my dress shirts, so I could just go through the closet, stick my hand under the collar, and easily figure out which shirt was which color.
So that's a pretty low-tech solution. These days, with all of the digital gadgets available, you can buy a small colorimeter, essentially, something that we would have used in the lab. We used to work for Xerox and did a lot of print quality studies. But they sell these little devices that you can just hold the garment up to, or vice versa, and it'll tell you what color it is.
Right. In fact, while we were investigating what types of gadgets like that were available these days, turns out we found out that there were actually some software or applications you could put on your phones. Like the iPhone has an app called Color ID. There is an app for that. You put it on your iPhone, you point the iPhone at your clothing, and it'll tell you what color it is. There's another company called the Code Factory, and I believe their web address is www.codefactory.com. They also make a colored recognizer program that you can load onto certain kinds of phones and use to check the colors of things.
So another trick we've recently started using is using extra buttons. So just as with sneakers, when they wear out, they go from being the favorite sneakers for running down to just walking, down to doing dirty jobs around the house, down to being gardening shoes, and they move from place to place to place in the house as they go through this migration, and I have no idea which is which, but I just don't touch his sneakers. It's the same deal with the blue jeans, which he wears all the time, and eventually they start to fray. So you buy another pair of blue jeans, and they're all identical. We bring another pair of blue jeans into the closet. Well, now how does he know which one's frayed how badly? Because he wants to wear the best pair.
Right. Which ones are the ones I want to wear, you know, during the day to look good? Which ones are the hiking ones? Which ones are the ones for working in the garden?
And then which ones are the ones for when we're getting into paint? That's like the bottom of the bottom.
So we've taken to putting buttons on the inside of the waistband of the jeans. And every time it gets a little bit older or I get a new pair of jeans, the old pair gets demoted by getting an extra button. So the more buttons it has on it, the older the pair of jeans is, and you know, the more grungier task it's suited for. And my favorite is the sock tuckers. I don't know how many people have heard of sock tuckers, but we found out years ago about these little plastic devices that have two little holes in them, and this is to keep your socks paired up. So essentially you take each sock of a pair and stick it through the two holes in the little sock tucker, and your socks are forever paired. Now, of course, you can't wear them like that. But, you know, after you take them off, you throw them in the wash that way, and they come out of the wash all paired. You throw them into your drawer when they come out of the wash, and they're all paired. And, you know, I think this is something that's useful even for people that don't have any vision problems. I mean, how many people get up in the early morning and it's dark and they can't see what's going on? They don't have the glasses, and you got to go fishing around to figure out the difference between the dark brown socks and the black socks. This would make it a lot easier.
Right. And it's better than that because we have at least three different styles. So he's got the blue ones in one style and the tan ones in another style and so on. And that way, not only do they all stay together, but he knows which is which. So right. That works great.
So we found those in some of those catalogs we've mentioned in the past, like Maxi Aids. But you can also find them commercially in the five and dime stores, if you like.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about audio-described programming. People are forever asking, how do you manage to watch movies if you can't see the screen? Well, you know, it's kind of like real life. He doesn't see the rest of the world any better than he sees the television or the movie screen. And so he's learned to pay attention to non-visual cues. Fortunately, there's somebody called the Foley Mixer, that's our best friend, and they make sure that the proper audio cues are provided in every movie and television show. If there's a horse going by, they make sure it sounds like a horse is going by.
You hear the clip-clops.
That's right. If they're opening a door, it creaks every single time. If it's nighttime, you'll hear a lot more crickets than you might expect.
Right. I can always tell nighttime in a movie.
So be grateful to the Foley Mixer. And there's always somebody in charge of sound effects in live theater also. But sometimes you just need someone to tell you what's going on the screen. You know, we like Mel Brooks. He's hysterical, but many of his jokes are sight gags, and if there's nobody describing it to you, how do you know what it is? So if you don't have a friend handy, described programming can achieve this for you. Video descriptions are a way to inform people who have vision issues of what's going on the television or movie screen. It's the insertion of verbal descriptions about the setting and or action in a program when information about these visual elements is not otherwise contained in the audio portion of the program. And these descriptions will supplement the regular audio track of the program, and they try to do their best to keep the descriptions in between other things you might want to listen to. So let's start by describing what the government mandates. And this is an ever-changing scenario. So from the FCC, this is getting it right from the horse's mouth on their website, they said, in July of 2000, the FCC adopted rules to make television more accessible to people with vision disabilities by mandating that a certain amount of programming contain video description. These rules took effect in April 2002, but were vacated by a federal court 7 months later. As a result, video description is no longer required. Nevertheless, some programming providers voluntarily continue to provide video descriptions. Of course, you know, some of the major commercial channels each have a few shows, CBS, Fox, Nickelodeon. PBS, bless their souls, has dozens, including Nova, Nature, Masterpiece Theater, lots of children's shows. And Turner Classic Movies has over 150 movies that have described audio with them. And every single time they broadcast one of those movies, they do it with described video.
So some of those are done pretty well. I mean, they're done to different levels. I mean, some of them I find a little bit annoying at times. They'll interrupt what's going on. For instance, when someone opens a door and walks into a room, I can hear them walking in and pulling out a chair. And if the described audio says, he's opening a door, he's walking into a room, he's pulling out a chair, I find that kind of frustrating because then you're missing all the background music that the composers put in and stuff like that. But some of them are all done very well. And for instance, as Nancy says, with Mel Brooks, where many of the funny things are sight gags, that would be very difficult to watch without some kind of hints as to what's going on. So, you know, like anything else, there are good and bad, and it's worth testing out a few. If you don't like the first one, you know, try another one and see how it goes.
Well, and the other thing that we've learned is, you know, Pete's had vision problems all his life, so he's always been cued into the other audio signals he's getting. But somebody who lost their vision later in life maybe isn't so clued into that, and so having the audio description is a bigger help from that. And in live theater, Jiva, which is the biggest theater group in town here, has at least one performance of every single production they put on that includes described audio. And they have a blind person on their staff working with them to make sure they get it right. And they've gotten lots of compliments from various blind agencies of how well they do it.
And maybe that can be the focus of one of our shows in the future, to go to one of those shows and interview the people who do that.
So this week's focus topic is audacity. In the dictionary, audacity is defined as, quote, boldness or daring, especially with confident or arrogant disregard for personal safety, conventional thought, or other restrictions. What we're talking about has nothing to do with that. In today's context, audacity, as they say on their website, is, quote, free open source software for recording and editing sounds. It is available for Mac, Microsoft Windows, GNU Linux, and other operating systems. And you can get all sorts of detailed information and even download it for free. The whole thing's free at their website, which is Audacity, A-U-D-A-C-I-T-Y, dot SourceForge, S-O-U-R-C-E-F-O-R-G-E, dot net. So Pete, why don't you tell us a little bit more about what Audacity is and what it can be used for?
So as Nancy said, Audacity is basically a sound editing and recording program with a fair number of capabilities. And what's neat is, you know, as she also mentioned, it's a free program. There are a lot of these open source programs where people who just enjoy writing programs or making utilities that either they're going to use or other people can use, they just enjoy putting it together and they put it up on the web for other people to use, and it gets shared that way. So Audacity is like this. It's basically community built. And what it's used for is, for example, I'll use it for if I want to listen to something on the internet, but I don't want to have to wait around for the whole thing to play out. I can run Audacity and record anything that my computer is hearing for some period of time. So I can record maybe an internet radio show or something like that, and then I'll have it and I can listen to it at some other time. You can also record yourself if you have a microphone that you plug into your computer, or a webcam. You have a microphone in the webcam, and if you wanted to record yourself for any reason or to make a podcast, for example, you could use Audacity to do that.
And that works so well, it's hard to tell the difference between, you know, is it real or is it Memorex, as the old commercials used to go?
So Nancy talked a little bit about the website where you can get Audacity. It's again at audacity.sourceforge.net, and you'll find a download link there, and then they usually let you choose which operating system you want to download it for, and you go through, just follow the links to whichever operating system you want and follow the directions on downloading it. You get it onto your computer, and then it usually comes with what they call a self-extracting installer, which means you click on this file, it automatically uncompresses it and starts the install process. And again, that's pretty easy. You just follow through the usual windows. They'll tell you when to click next, where do you want to put the program. And you know, generally, if you take the defaults, you're in pretty good shape. So we talked a little bit about what it's capable of. So let's talk about recording yourself. I mean, basically, you have to first set up the entire process. So you want to go to the preferences dialog, which you get to with control P, or
P is in preference.
Yeah, that's true. And then, or in the edit pull down menu, you'll find the preferences dialog. And in there are lots and lots of options. But the first thing you need to do is to look at the devices dialog and determine which is your playback device. In other words, which of your sound devices do you want to hear through and which device do you want to record through. So for example, generally you would want to pick your internal sound card to record from and playback from. But if, for example, you wanted to record from another microphone or a webcam, you would pick your webcam or your microphone there. So the first thing, as I said, go into preferences and devices and then choose which device you want to playback from and record from. The next thing you'll want to do you can save the Audacity audio in various formats. And it'll save in like the Windows WAV format and a number of other formats. But a very convenient one is often MP3. Well, MP3, because it's has to be licensed, they don't put it right in the program, but they give you the ability to download and install it very easily. So again, you go to the Preferences dialog with Control-P, and then you go to the Libraries tab, and you go in there, and there's very simple directions for downloading and installing the components that are necessary to create MP3 files. Now, once you have it all set up for which device you're going to record from, which you're going to play through, you can actually start recording with Audacity. And that turns out to be a very easy process. All you do is hit the R key, and Audacity starts recording. And you just go along until you're finished with your recording, and then you hit the space bar, and that stops recording. And then if you hit the space bar again, you can start listening to what you recorded. And the space bar is basically an on-off toggle for starting and stopping it once you've recorded something.
And we've used this to record Pete's trio. He plays music with a couple of guys, and we got all three of them playing their hearts out on their instruments, and nobody had enough fingers left over to run the Audacity program. So I was sitting on the side of the room with a computer and hitting the space bar. I felt so empowered.
So there's a couple of other ways to get an automatic recording. So sometimes you may want to just, you don't want to have to sit there and hit the space bar to tell it when to stop recording, but you may want to just say record for an hour. Well, if you hit the Alt key plus R simultaneously to get into the transport pull-down menu, you'll see a menu that talks about the record timer. And if you get into this record timer dialog, you can just say how long you want Audacity to record for before stopping the recording. And also in that transport dialog, if you hit Alt plus R again, there's also a dialog for setting up a record automatically when the sound in the room reaches an automatic level. So for example, if you wanted to see if anybody was monkeying around in your house during the day when you were gone as sort of a, you know, a burglar trap or something like that, Audacity would automatically turn on and start recording if the sound reached a certain level, and then stop when the sound went below a certain level. So you can catch some people that way.
So you might think that, you know, one of these sound recording programs wouldn't want interference from a screen reader, but I gather this thing works pretty well with JAWS and other screen readers.
Yeah, actually, the latest version of Audacity, if you use any of the 1.3x versions, you know, 1.3133 or whatever, they were actually modified specifically to work easily with screen readers and lots of hotkeys. So once you've had your recording, then you can save these things to any of a number of formats, as I pointed out. And then also there are a number of editing functions. So if you want to cut a recording, clip a recording, there are also lots of different effects you can add, like fading in, fading out, changing the levels, changing the pitch, stretching out time, compressing time. But that's too much detail for now, and it's one of these things that you just need to play around with. So you can find it a useful program for many things.
Right, and needless to say, if you just get into help for this program, same as any others, you'll get help. That's why they call it that.
Oh, and the webpage for the help documentation is, do we have that?
We have the webpage for the users of screen readers.
Yeah, that's the best help documentation I've found on the web.
Okay, and I have no idea what most of this stands for, but it's www.vip, like very important person, .chowo, chowo.co.uk/JAWS-guides. So let me repeat that.
That's
a little
tough
peculiar.
One.
vip.chowo.co.uk/JAWS-guides. And you'll notice there's no .com on here. That's because it's a British site. That's what the .co.uk is. That's instead of .com. So that's for a British commercial venture. Okay, now for this week's high-tech item, which is arguably less high-tech than Audacity. So if that didn't make your head spin, maybe you'll be interested in this. We'll be talking about blindness, websites, and distribution lists. So we don't want to discourage you from thinking that we're geniuses or even omniscient, but there are many sources of information about living with low vision, and we've been following these for years. In particular, Pete has, because of course he makes use of a lot of the information he gets. We draw much of the information used in this show from web-based resources. So, Pete, why don't you describe some of the resources that you use most often?
Yeah. So first of all, it's impossible to be inclusive here. And if you're looking for some of these resources, the first place I would go for something special is to go to Google and type in, you know, the word blind or visually impaired and specifically what you're looking for. But as far as some of the things that I use myself, there's one for blind programmers, for example. I do a lot of programming, interested in techie things.
So, and that's blind-computing@jaws-users.com. And of course, every character is important. You miss one character, you go to the wrong place. Although sometimes Google says, did you mean? Right. So let me repeat that. blind-computing@jaws-users.com.
So from the at sign in there, you can obviously tell this is a mailing list. And what happens is once you sign up to be on this mailing list, you can submit an email, usually a question, onto the list. And then people who are members of that list will receive your question or posting, and whoever is knowledgeable about it or might have a hint about an answer will write back, and everybody on the list gets the answer. Now, sometimes one trick about these DLs or mailing lists, DL is a distribution list, by the way. So one trick about these things is they can sometimes be overwhelming with the amount of information you'll get. And if you just sign up to receive every time someone posts a note that you get it, you could wind up with, you know, 10, 50, or 100 notes in your inbox pretty easily. But almost all of these distribution lists, these DLs, give you the option to sign up to receive the postings in what they call a digest mode. And the digest mode means that they collect all the email that someone sent for either a day or maybe half a day, and they'll send that to you as one email. So you get one long email instead of 100 little emails. And I usually subscribe in a digest mode just to keep things a little bit more simple. The other way of dealing with some of these DLs is to put a rule in your mail program to send all the messages that come from a certain address, put them in a separate folder. So everything that comes to my blindcomputing@jawsusers.com, I'll just, instead of going to my inbox, it goes to like my JAWS directory or something like that. So another one I find very useful, I'm also like music on the side, and in particular playing with MIDI and different kinds of audio. So there's another very useful one for musicians called MIDI Mag, which is midimag@midimag.org. And this is a DL for musicians and related questions, any kind of audio things. And I found that quite helpful.
Or if you're interested in technology, there's another one that called Top Tech Tidbits for Thursday. That's very alliterative. It's a one-stop shopping for concise adaptive technology news from a blindness perspective. And to subscribe, again, you send them an email at TTTT, there's four of them, join@top.enterprises.com. Now, this is a little bit different. That first dot isn't really a dot. So it's TTTT-join@, and I'm going to spell it this time, TOPDOTENTERPRISES.com. So top.enterprises.com. That's another great source. Or for just at the description on their website for Fred's Head, says it contains tips, techniques, tutorials, in-depth articles, and resources for and by blind or visually impaired people, offered by the American Printing House for the Blind. And their website is www.fredshead.info. That's FREDSHEAD. So that's about it for this week. We seem to be running out of time. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about looking at people while they're talking to you and vice versa. Many people like that. Accessible games, so we'll be having some fun. will be describing the National Library Service digital audio player. And using thumb drives and SD cards is a good method for transferring information. So if you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on this show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at area code 585-258-0333. And we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.